The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
The Kabbalah teaches us that in the beginning all of existence was endless light. The Kabbalists describe an experience, and they use words, the best words that would suggest the truth, which is only something one knows experientially. So when the Kabbalists say that in the beginning all of existence was endless light, they don't literally mean that it is light, but rather endless light is a metaphor that suggests the experience of existence. And we developed that, in fact, experientially, what really is that light? That light is the light of God's oneness. But really, experientially, that would be synonymous with saying that light is the light of love. So the first talks that we did, I basically developed how in the beginning all of existence was endless light means that in the beginning all of existence was endless love. And that the presence of God, the manifestation of God, is love. And all the attributes of God, wisdom, understanding, truth, kindness, compassion, those are really the colors in the spectrum of the light of love. So that's what we did last time, that really the ground, the root, the context, the content, the essence of our lives is this endless light or this endless love. And this light transcends time, this light transcends space because it existed before the limitations of time and space. And so too love. We experience to transcend time and space because, you know, when a person loves another person, then space does not create limitations and there's always time when you love another person. Today, I'm going to further develop how love becomes manifest according to the Kabbalah, and all the more so how it becomes manifest through us. So, let's begin. So this really is part three in our series. The Kabbalah teaches that in the beginning all of existence was endless light. And when God wanted to create you and me and this multiple, diverse universe, He, so to speak, withdrew His light from the center, creating a void, creating a vacuum. Within this vacuum, the Kabbalah teaches that God created vessels. Vessels that are very, very different than the light. The light is endless, the vessels are limited, the light extends, projects, gives, so to speak, and the vessels receive. Vessels very different. And God then, according to the Kabbalah, projects a thin ray of endless light into these vessels, but the vessels can't take the light and they explode, which is referred to in Kabbalah as Shvirat HaKelim, the breaking of the vessels. The continuation of the story in a nutshell is called Tikkun, the fixing of these vessels, and our mission on earth is to pull together these broken vessels and reconstruct them so that they will indeed accept that light that they originally were not able to take. The Kabbalah then ends off with a paradoxical statement. It says that although the light surrounds this vacuum, the light actually still fills the vacuum, and it's as if nothing changed. And that's the bizarre paradox.
Thank you.
Okay. What the Kabbalah, what we can derive from this Kabbalistic story is really four ingredients to love. And what I'm going to do today is go in depth into one of those ingredients. We've shared a little bit about this before, but not at this depth that I intend to probe. So the Kabbalah really, from this story, and it's highly edited, from this story we can really elucidate four components to the drama, the dynamic of love. Because really that story that I just shared with you, as although it didn't sound very romantic, that story is really a description of the dynamism of love. What is love? Just as it says in the Kabbalah, in the beginning all of existence was endless light, the endless presence of God, the endless love of God, so too in the beginning of your existence and my existence, there was just you and there was just me. But when God wanted to create a place and a space for beings other than himself and actualize the possibility of love, God moves himself, his light, his presence, so to speak, from the center and creates a space. And so too, when we want to love somebody, then we too need to pull ourselves out of the center and create a space for somebody else in our lives. And that space isn't just for somebody else, but that space is for someone who is very other than ourselves. As it is in the Kabbalah, God creates a space for vessels, but these vessels are very different than the light. And then says that God projects a thin ray of his endless light to these vessels, and so too, when we want to love somebody, we've got to create a space in our life for somebody else. It's got to be a creating of space for someone who's very other and different than ourselves. And then just as God gives over his light to the vessels, so too in the act of love, we have to give over our light, ourselves, to another. And then the fourth piece, which we will go into a greater length at another time, is that we have to allow that other to do the same for us, to love and to let love. Today I want to explore in depth the first ingredient, the first step to love, which I call the art of making space. In the beginning, all of existence was endless light. When God wanted to take his endless love and make it manifest, actualize, so to speak, the possibility of love, then God removes his light from the center and creates a space. And that's exactly what we need to do in our lives to mirror and to emulate God. Let's just talk about what space really is. I mean, just for a moment, although some of you might be holding your telephone in your hand, but if you were to hold up your two hands facing each other as if you're about to clap, right? But keeping them apart. What is really between your hands, right? We would say space. There's space between our hands. But the truth is that we would think there's really nothing between our hands. I mean, there's nothing between our hands, but that's not correct. Because if there is really nothing between our hands, then our hands should be together, right? So there really is something between our hands. It's called space. Now, this is really quite an important experience, to experience the realness, so to speak, the substance of space. Now, space you can't see, you can't taste, you can't feel, you can't hear. Space is not a thing, and yet it's still not nothing, right? It's very real. And so we could call space nothing, right? But nothing is not the same thing as nothing, because nothing is a reality, but not a reality that comes in the packaging called thinghood, a thinginess, right? And so space is very real. And, in our Midrashic literature, God is actually referred to as the place or the space. In fact, as we approach the holiday of Pesach, we will recall that in the Haggadah, in the story that we tell over at Pesach night, we sing a song, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, blessed is the place, the space, blessed is He. One of the terms that suggests the truth of God is Hamakom, the place, the space. And for those of you who heard me before, you know that that one of the most important ideas that Judaism comes to communicate is God is not some being floating in outer space. Rather, space is what we would call God, and if anything, we're floating within God. God is not over there and you and I are over here, but you and I exist within the light of the presence of the reality of God. God is our space. And as the Kabbalah points out, the light surrounds the vacuum, and yet the light still fills the vacuum, and therefore space not only embraces, but also fills. There's really no such thing as dead space. All space is alive, because all space is the manifestation of God's presence. It's all of space is God's light. And that light surrounds us, that light embraces us, and that light fills us. The light surrounds the vacuum, and yet mysteriously the light still fills the vacuum. And yet, when God wants to create a place and space for you and me within Himself, so to speak, His light, His presence, then, like a room full of water, you can't put something in it unless you displace some of the water. And therefore, the Kabbalah, in a metaphorical manner, is saying that God, so to speak, removed Himself, or the Kabbalah, more specifically, said removed His light. And the first talk I shared with you, I explained why Kabbalah really talks about God's light, because everything we're saying is God is so revealed to us, God relative to us. So, to be careful, we're not really talking about God from God's perspective, but God is so appears to us from our perspective. So really the Kabbalah talks about God's light. But that light is the light of love. And how is love manifest? It's by creating a space, moving out of the center and creating a space. And yet the mysterious point here is that in this act of removing the light, the light continues to still be present. And that's the mystery of love. When a person moves themselves out of the center to create a space for another person, they don't lose any part of themselves. They are not displaced. Somehow, mysteriously, you give place to another person in your life, and yet that doesn't take place, that doesn't cut a hole out in your life. If anything, the moving of yourself out of the center and putting someone else in that center in some way actually fills you more, right? It does not deplete you in any way. That's the mystery of love. The more you love the person, the more full you feel, the more expanded you feel. And yet to love another person, you've got to move yourself out of center and create a space and a place in your life and yourself for somebody else. And yet mysteriously, that does not diminish you in any way. If anything, you somehow, by emptying yourself out to another person, you mysteriously become even more full. And that's suggested here in this Kabbalistic image of God removing Himself and yet remaining present, right? Simultaneously. And what we learn from the Kabbalah, that the presence of God, this light of love, really is the context and the content of life, that we are embraced by and we are filled with God's loving presence. And the whole chore of our lives, the whole goal of Jewish living, is to become aware of this truth, right? Because this truth is happening right this very second, right? Right this very second, God's loving presence embraces and fills us. And whether we are the greatest sinner in the universe, that will not change that ontological fact. What will change is we will not acknowledge, we will not experience that ontological fact. But the fact that God's light surrounds us and embraces us and God's light fills us, that's a fact. Nothing we can do, nothing we will ever do, can change that. But what we will do can determine whether we feel that. And that's really the difference between heaven and hell. Heaven is to experience this truth that I am sharing with you, and hell is to be oblivious of it. And the reason why it's hell is because the truth is that you are one with God, God is one with you, and only God's loving presence is real, and yet you don't feel that, you don't experience that, and that tension between your experience and what is real creates the stress of what would be, so to speak, described as the fires of hell. But what all the goal of Jewish living, all the rituals, all the laws, you know, all the teachings are there to empower us to experience this truth, to experience that loving presence that creates the space for our own presence and yet mysteriously fills us. Now, the theme of technology is to transcend time and space. That's what technology is about. It's about making things go faster and making things smaller, trying to get more done in less time, trying to fit more in within less space. In fact, Sony describes its mission statement to be miniaturization, right? It's all about, you know, fitting more and more into less and less. The truth is, however, that love is the technology of the soul. And that is the technology of Judaism. Because without love, the world will never be big enough. In other words, just as much as technology on a kind of physical level is aspiring to create, you know, to put more and more into less space, so too love is a technology that can in fact put more and more in less space. In fact, I had mentioned one of the earlier talks, the Talmud says that two people who love each other, right, they can sleep on the edge of a razor, right? The limitations of space do not in any way bother them. But two people who don't love each other, even if their bed is as wide as the universe, it will be too small. See, the true space, the real space is love. The real space is God's presence. And if we are oblivious of that, if we are not in sync with that, then we will feel cramped no matter where we are. We might live in some palatial, you know, mansion, but if there isn't love, right, if there isn't love, then we will feel cramped. It will feel small. I've heard children tell me how they've got to move out of their parents' home, but I know their parents have the most incredible mansions, and you ask them why, and they say, because I need my space, man. Like, you know, man, I need my space. And so it doesn't matter how physically big one's home is, or how physically free one's time is, if there isn't the presence of love in our space or in our time, there'll never be enough space, and there'll never be enough time. And we won't have time for anyone, and we have no place for anyone. And I believe I shared with you, you know, one of my teachers was a rabbi by name of Rabbi Zilberman, Zichron al-Vracha, he passed away. And Rabbi Zilberman had at least 12 children, I think even more. And when I would go visit with Rabbi Zilberman to study with him, he had a home that basically had three bedrooms, right? He had a bedroom for him and his wife, he had a bedroom for the girls, and a bedroom for the boys. And in fact, to get to the office, or the study area where he and I would study, I had to walk through the bedroom of the boys. And it was really quite remarkable, the innovation of where you could put a bed, how beds could fold out from the ceiling, from the wall, pull out his drawers. I mean, it was amazing how in this little room you had layers and layers of children sleeping in these rooms. But I want you to know, this home was so spacious because there was just so much love in that home. These children, you could see, never ever felt in any way lacking, because what creates the space is really the love. And if that's not there, it doesn't matter how big our home is, it won't make a difference, because what makes a difference is how big our heart is. And that's all that matters. And so, the Midrash says something very odd. It says that the ark in the temple, there was an ark, and inside that golden ark, on top of it were these two figurines, one male and one female, facing each other, an imagery of love. And this ark had two handles that when it would be moved, it could be moved with these two handles. And there's a very mysterious midrash that says that the entire Jewish people were able to fit into between these two handles. What are they talking about? How can the entire Jewish people fit into a space that is, a couple feet wide? The idea here again is that it's really the space of love that creates the space. And that's when you know the presence of God is in your life. When the presence of love, when you feel in your life that there is space in your life for others and there's time in your busy schedule for others, then you know that the presence of God, the endless light of God, is in your space and in your time. Other than that, then there'll never be enough time and there'll never be enough space. In fact, the oral tradition teaches that the land of Israel is referred to as Eretz Tzvi, which means the land of the deer, right? Which is very odd, because you don't see that much deer around these here parts. The Midrash says the reason why the land is called the land of deer, or the deer land, is because when a deer is hunted and skinned, for some strange reason, the skin does not fit the size of the deer. So it's a bizarre kind of fact the Midrash says about deers, that when you skin them, right, of course when they're dead, right, suddenly you discover that the skin is too small to fit, right, the size of the deer. And that's what it says about the land of Israel, that the land of Israel is a small land that can hold so much. Again, what does that mean? What it means is the land of Israel is a special land whereby we can feel the presence of God more, and the limitations of space begin to melt, because in the space of love, right, the oneness of love can include and hold much together. Therefore, basically the equation is this: the more God's loving presence is manifest in our homes, the more room there is in our homes for others to be there. The more God's presence, loving presence, is manifest in our time, then the more time we suddenly have with the ability to do more. And it's an amazing thing, we've all experienced this, that somehow, we never feel to have enough time, and then sometimes it's the more we do, mysteriously, the more time we suddenly have. It's a mysterious quality of time. But the truth is that the real essence of time and space is the manifestation of God, and the real essence of time and space is the loving presence of God. And the more we love, and the more we love each other, and the more we love God, the more we become aware of and truly experience the dynamics of the true space and the true time wherein which we exist. So now, how do we create a loving space in our life? How do we mirror? How do we appropriate ourselves? How do we live in tandem with the truth of God? And that's by doing exactly what God did according to the Kabbalah, that just as God moved His self from the center, creating a space for others, so too when we love somebody else, then the first step is to get out of the center. And that's very hard for people to do, because a lot of people are very self-centered. But the first step in love is to move oneself out of the center and create this loving space, right? An egocentric person is not going to succeed in love. They will not be a vessel through which the presence of God's loving light can become manifest, because they're so full of themselves, right? When you're full of yourself, there's no place in your life for somebody else. But that's the whole amazing thing. When you pull yourself out of the center and you empty out and you make a place for someone else, it's so mysterious how the empty becomes even more full. You become more full by emptying yourself up. That's the amazing thing. In fact, this act of God withdrawing himself from the center really is an act of sacrifice. You give up a part of yourself and create a place in your life for someone else, and yet somehow you end up getting more, right? And so even God, it says in the oral tradition, says about an egocentric person that he and I cannot live in the same world. The truth is nobody can live in the same world. In fact, there are people, their egocentricity so oozes from them, they walk into a room and you suddenly feel there's no place in here. Suddenly you feel cramped, and you don't even know why. It's because there's a person in there that's sucking up all the space because they are not embracing the loving presence of God. They are not exuding the loving presence of God. They are egocentric. They're not able to move themselves out of the center. In order to let God come into your life, in order to let love come into your life, and in order to let others come into your life, you gotta move yourself out of the center. But of course, why are people egocentric? Because they're afraid to move themselves out of the center, because they're afraid if they're not in the center, then they're nothing. And very often, the real obstacle to love is that people don't love themselves. That a person is so weak in their self-esteem that they're afraid to move themselves out of the center and put someone else in the center. But the amazing thing is that the way one actually accomplishes true self-worth is precisely by moving out of the center, welcoming the loving presence of God in their life, creating a space for others in their life, and suddenly their self-worth shoots up even higher. Again, the mystery of the emptying out mysteriously, ironically, ends up feeling even more full. But when a person is egocentric, then for some reason they never have place in their home for other people. They never have time in their schedule for other people. But a person who is God-centric, then it's amazing how there's always place for more. And it's amazing how they can find time for people in their busy schedules. Because that's the mystery of welcoming the presence of God into our life, that light of God into our life. And in fact, you know, the Talmud says, really, how is it possible that two opposites could share one space? I mean, this is, when you think of it, the institution of marriage is totally ridiculous. It is against all logic that two people, not only are they opposite sex, but they are so incredibly different with such different upraising and such different needs and such different desires, such different tastes. How is it possible two people can share one space? And in fact, that's why divorce is so rampant. And not only that, I just heard a statistic that 85% of marriages that are still intact are actually psychologically divorced. In other words, 85% of marriages today are actually in a psychological divorce. They're not technically divorced. They live together. They might work together. They take care of their kids together. But emotionally, they are actually divorced. Okay? Now, that makes sense, because the chances of two very different people becoming one is really ridiculous. And yet the Talmud says that only when the presence of God fills our homes, fills our lives, can the mystery of the miracle of two opposites share one space, one life. And therefore, you know, the Talmud points out that the name for a man is Ish, and the name for a woman is Isha. They share two letters, Aleph Shin, which spells fire, and the two letters that are different is Yud for Ish and He for Isha, and the letter Yud He is one of the names of God. So the Talmud says that when a couple have Yud-Heh, the name of God, the presence of God in their relationship, then the mystery of two opposites sharing one life, one space, right, is possible. But when the presence of God is not in their relationship, right, then the yud and the hey is removed and all you have left is fire, which just burns and disintegrates. And so really, the Kabbalah teaches us that in the beginning all of existence was endless light. This endless light is the endless loving presence of God. For that loving presence to become fully manifest, it takes creating space. God created space, so to speak, within himself, within his presence, within his light for you and I. And we too, in order to tap into and experience that loving space, we too need to move ourselves from the center. We too need to welcome that loving presence of God in our life by moving ourselves out of the center, putting God in our center, and suddenly we will experience endless space and endless time for others to enter into our lives. And not that everyone here online is interested in the dynamics of dating, but the truth is we're always dating our spouses. And the truth is, on dates, and one of my loves is shadchanis, is matchmaking. So it's a common thing that I hear, but unfortunately it's something I hear more from women than men, is that the fellow talked about himself all night long. Now again, that doesn't necessarily happen just on dates, because I've heard people say that in their marriage. Husband comes home, or wife comes home at night, and just talks about himself all night long. Doesn't ask me, how was your day? Doesn't ask me, what did you do? Right? And this again is not the method of creating space in your life. And I probably shared with you the joke whereby this woman says, he was on a date, and the guy spoke about himself all night long, and after 2-3 hours, so totally self-absorbed, he turns to her and says, "So, tell me, let's enough about me, let's talk about you. What do you think about me?" So there's this kind of self-absorbed, or people who just talk too much in general, right? It's not like they talk about themselves, but they just talk, and they don't create space for others in their life. Or, this is a little bit more relating to, people dating, but, on a date, if he or she sits too close to you, right, then, they're, again, invading your space. Or if a person speaks too close to your face, and again, that's not just in dating, but I've experienced that in relationships with people, women and men. They just talk too close to you, talk too close to your face, and they keep approaching you as they try to make their point, and they literally pin you against the wall. They are invading space. They don't know how to create space. Or people in relationships, and this doesn't have to be necessarily a romantic relationship, because this creating loving space is not just between men and women, it's also between women and women, men and men. It's asking questions that are too personal, too early. You just meet somebody and you start asking them a question that's really inappropriate. Right? That's not creating space for another person. You're invading their space. Right? Or people who constantly interrupt you in the middle of your sentence. Again, these are people who are not succeeding in creating space for someone else to be heard. Or people who are constantly completing your sentence, right? There's interrupting sentences, and then you're saying something and a person completes your sentence. It's extremely annoying because, again, these people are not creating the opportunity for space. Or relationships whereby the other person constantly needs to know where you are, what you're doing. Again, this is a person who does not know the art of making space. In fact, my daughters told me that in high school they were warned that men who constantly need to know where you are or constantly calling you, that's a sign of possibly an abusive husband. So, really, what did we share over here? In the beginning, all of existence was endless light, and this endless light is really the endless loving presence of God. When God wanted to make manifest, completely manifest this light, this presence, the first step is he creates a space within himself. He moves himself out of the center and creates a place and a space for you and I. The Kabbalah's teaching is that you and I actually exist within space, but space is actually the loving presence of God. Space is not nothing. Space is just no thing. Space is very real. And that really at this very moment, you and I exist within the loving presence of God, and we are permeated and filled with the loving presence of God. And the only question in our lives is, do we speak, think, and act in ways that acknowledge this truth and enable us to experience this truth, and that would be heaven on earth? Or do we think in ways and speak in ways and act in ways that deny this truth, that conceal this truth? And that creates actually for ourselves our own hell, even on earth. And the way we need to truly serve God, the way we need to truly be in tandem with this truth, is that we mirror this truth by also moving ourselves out of the center and learning the art of making space for others. But the first step in a loving relationship, whether it's a loving relationship with men or women, loving relationship with our children, loving relationship with just our friends, the first step is to move ourselves out of the center, creating a space in our lives for others, welcome, so to speak, that loving presence of God, and suddenly we will be blessed with the miraculous ability to always find a place in our heart and a moment in our schedule for somebody else.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.